The MMQB podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code the MMQB at FanDuel.com to play a risk-free tournament at up to $10. We're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app, enter our code MMQB for $20 off your first tickets.
If they feel like he's violated the rules and broken their trust over and over again, I feel like it's okay to move on from him.
The result looks similar, but the way they're getting him is this dude is just chucking it down the field. It's incredible to watch. Outside of Arizona, there really isn't anybody else that does this at this level.
Welcome to the MMQB podcast. My name is Robert Mays. I am joined by Robert Klemko. We are both writers for the MMQB. I don't know how to do this. This is the first time I've done this without like an awkward introduction.
Well, usually also we have Andy Benoit here to make it even more awkward, but Andy is in New York and has some microphone issues, so it's just you and me this time.
Yeah, apparently there's some MMQB party in New York this week. I was not invited to that, so I really appreciate the warm welcome from you guys.
I don't believe that. I think you turned down the invitation.
I have some work to do because I guess I still do that, but that's not important. What is important is that we just finished another kind of freaking crazy week of football. I had more fun watching this week than I have in some time. I don't know why it was. Even with that heartbreaking Bears fiasco, it still was a pretty, I don't know. It's the Jags-Titans game was the best game of the day, which if you had given me the best odds on planet Earth, I never would have thought that. The Steelers just burned the Colts to the ground, which I really enjoyed watching. The Patriots game was insane. There was a lot of watchable football this week, and I think that's fun as we're getting into, like, you know, the important part of the season, the part where this all starts to really matter.
The Patriots-Eagles game was awesome because it kind of showed how to beat New England when they have nobody on their roster but Tom Brady. And it evened up the NFC East, and now we have this ridiculous scenario where all the four teams, or I guess three teams, could lose out, and then the Cowboys would get into the playoffs at 6-10.
Yeah, and when I was talking about the week, I was mostly referring to my day on Sunday, and that's not even to mention whatever ridiculousness took place on Monday night, where, yeah. I don't know, everything about DeSean Jackson happened in over the course of like 38 seconds of actual gameplay. He ran backwards in a way that was completely inexplicable and fumbled the ball, and then just torched a guy downfield to go get what looked like the score that would decide the game, and then of course not. There has to be some garbage field goal. Matt Castle, NFL quarterback. It's all happening.
When DeSean Jackson turns it on, I honestly don't think there's anybody in the NFL that can catch him. Is there anybody that fast? I know Cordarrelle Patterson has an extra gear, but he just doesn't look as fast. Maybe that's because he's so much bigger.
Barnwell and I used to talk about this. We want a yearly combine. I want guys to have a recorded 40 time every single year. I just want to know. I want it to be a race. Have some pride. Wouldn't it be cool to call yourself, with actual certainty, the fastest guy in the league?
Well, now that don't they have the technology on, like, you can go on your Xbox or whatever.
That's true.
Yeah, how fast somebody was running on a given play. I haven't checked it out yet. I actually just got an Xbox One for Hanukkah this week. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah, that's a big move. I do not own an Xbox One. I don't really know how to play video games, so I'm worthless when it comes to that. But I would like to see those numbers because that's a really nice title. I mean, fastest man in the NFL is probably the best title you can have. I think more guys would vie for that than anything else.
I think more guys would want, like, scariest or most intimidating.
You really think so?
Well, think about how many more grunts there are, non-skill position players versus the skill position guys.
I guess, but I kind of just think that grunts just don't really care about anything. I don't think they really care about any sort of titles. It's just like, yeah, I don't care if I'm the scariest. I'm still going to beat the crap out of you. I mean, those guys are talking to offensive linemen, they're kind of sitting slumped wherever they are and just folded into whatever receptacle they happen to be sitting in at that moment. There's a lot of apathy about, you know, arbitrary I was going to say, you know, I was going to swear. I can't swear on this. But it's that's kind of where those guys sit. I think that for the most part, the guys of the Sean Jackson's ilk would be more interested in those sorts of things.
I think you're mistaking offensive linemen apathy towards media for just general apathy. I think those guys are probably completely different when it's not like open locker room or you're in their face.
That's probably true, but I'm thinking exactly of my conversation with Josh Sitton last year at Lambeau.
Okay.
And he's just you ever been in that side interview room at Lambeau Field where they have those like the black leather chairs?
Yeah, I love that room.
Yeah, they're kind of small, and he's just slumped into one of them, and you know he's got that gut, and he's got the beard, and I was asking him how he felt about his relative lack of fame, considering how good of a player he is in relation to everyone in the league, and he's like, I don't care who knows my name except the guys who vote for the Pro Bowl. That's all I care about. So I mean, I guess that's some sort of accolade, but it's overall it seemed like he was pretty chill about the whole thing.
I interviewed Andy Bulumba, the backup linebacker in that room, tore his ACL a year ago. But his story is just ridiculous. I mean, he's a survivor of the Civil War in the Congo, and he had this harrowing tale about having a gun put to his head and his mom's head. And me and the PR guy are just sitting in there listening like, Jesus Christ, we grew up in the suburbs, you know?
Yeah, trust me, that's very far from my life. We'll go behind the curtain here for like 30 more seconds before we get into the actual show. But when you how do you find a story like that? Do you read a lot of local coverage and then try to just dig in deeper? I don't like what's your process of getting those things?
You know, I think most of it is reading local coverage and seeing where maybe a local guy kind of brush the surface of something, and maybe I could dive in a little bit deeper. Not to say that those guys do a bad job.
Their jobs are just different. I mean, that's how that is. Yeah. I mean, they have to cover the team every day. They can't spend two weeks writing a 3,500-word feature on a guy. They have to tell me who's inactive that week. I mean, that's just the nature of the gig.
Exactly. And so I had read, I think Tyler Dunn did a little piece on Bulumba. Not a long thing, but he had said, you know, he doesn't like to talk about what happened in the Congo. And so I saw that as kind of a little challenge, and I see myself as one of Tyler's competitors, but honestly, I don't think that there's a better feature writing beat guy in the NFL.
I 100% agree. But Tyler, who was at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a couple of years and is now at the Buffalo News, just for reference, he's a very good Bills beat writer.
Yeah. You want to jump into some of these topics that are
Let's do
hot?
It. And you know what? Right. Let's start with the hottest topic. The man who is the most lit at all times, Mr. Johnny Manziel.
So we go from, 2 weeks ago, Pettine demotes him to third string, and it looks like he's not going to play the rest of the year. And now Pettine comes out and has this really forthright, but somehow also awkward press conference, and Johnny Manziel's a starter.
None of this makes sense. I mean, it's just, one of my favorite parts of Sunday was on the bottom line on the scroll, I can't remember which channel it was, it said, Browns hope that eventually Johnny Manziel can make a push to be the starter. This is your choice. You're choosing to not play him. This isn't some complicated, convoluted system where he hasn't reached this bar of compatibility or aptitude. You're starting Austin Davis. You can do this. It's within your power, Browns.
You know, I remember I was at the Combine, and I was having dinner with some mutual friends, and we met a couple Browns people, and like Johnny Manziel to them was Voldemort. They would not say his name because they were so pissed off about how he had squandered the opportunity and just how he wasn't taking it seriously. And you got to understand where some of these guys are coming from in the NFL, these assistant coaches, scouts, pro personnel guys. They have to grind. I mean, if you're a scout in the NFL, if you're a national scout, you spend the entire football offseason on the road, away from your family, going to places like Northern Iowa to look at, you know, a running back that your team is most likely not going to draft. And
yeah, you live a very red roof in-centric life.
Exactly. So when you see Johnny Manziel come in as a rookie and just completely not take it seriously. I mean, I think that there are probably, I won't say a majority. I think you could split it down the line 50-50, people who want to give him another chance and people in that organization who just want absolutely nothing to do with him?
I've never been a fan. Even when he came into the league, I didn't see him being successful eventually.
You know, I remember a year ago at the Combine, just met a couple of Browns people through mutual friends. You know how the Combine is. You go to a restaurant and it's a who's who of NFL people, and you know, the nicer the place, the higher up they are. But I remember just talking to these guys and trying to get them to say something about Johnny Manziel, but he was like Voldemort to them, like he, the guy who shall not be named, because they were just so angry about the opportunity and how he was treating it and how he wasn't taking it seriously. And you know, these NFL scouts, I mean, these guys who work their way up the ranks, they're on the road from, you know, I guess February, March till the draft, essentially. Well, no, beyond that.
I mean, just during the NFL, during the college season. I mean, those guys, if you're a regional scout, you know, you're hanging out in, you know, UNC Greensboro, Red Roof Inn. That's your lifestyle. That's how you go about your year. I mean, it is definitely a grind.
So when you have this chosen kid from Texas A&M who has had everything handed to him and acts that way, it turns you off. And I think that there are a large number of people in that organization who don't ever want to see him on the field because of how he's handled himself. But I think there are also people there, and obviously, clearly there are people there that want to see him on the field and don't want that investment that they've made completely squandered.
First round picks aren't what they used to be in terms of overall capital that you have to use. I mean, it's not, you're not paying them the same amount of money. They still matter a huge deal. If you don't hit on them, you're never going to be a reasonable franchise. It's very early to say we don't want him to play because he's been, you know, whatever. He's squandered it, or he's been somebody that we don't really like personally. He's thrown one more pass this season than Blaine Gabbert. That's not enough. I mean, that's not enough to have a absolute firm decision. Is this guy our quarterback going forward? You need more from him.
You know, I disagree, man. Like,
you think he's done?
This guy. I mean, I can't say that he's done. I mean, I don't know, but if they feel like he's violated the rules and broken their trust over and over again, I feel like it's okay to move on from him. I don't think we're in a position to say that, you know, this small sample size isn't enough to bench him.
I see where you're coming with that. I also, if they were, I don't know, with the way they played 12 games, if they're sitting at 5-7 and McCown has been playing and he's been solid and, you know, they're scraping by some wins and the offense looks like it has a little bit of juice from time to time, they're a mess. I understand that this is something, somebody you don't love the way he's gone about this whole thing, but what do you have to lose? Can you really be any more of a punchline than you've been over the last 5, 6, 7 years? At least if you spend a first-round pick on this kid and you think maybe he has a chance to grow up a little bit in the way that some guys do, and you give him a shot to actually play football, it all coalesces at one point. I see where you're coming from, and I don't necessarily disagree. I also just think that they're grasping for straws at every single level right now, and this might be this is a very expensive straw just to throw away.
Think about being Mike Pettine, and you've worked your entire life to become an NFL head coach, and all the guys that are your assistants right now are either your best friends or the guys that you've worked the best with in your time in the NFL. I mean, he met some of these guys 20, 30 years ago. And he's got this quarterback situation where the guy clearly isn't respecting the job, isn't taking it seriously. And so not only does he have to answer to the owners who want the kid to play, but he's got to answer to his assistant coaches who are going to judge him based on this decision for years and years to come. They're going to look at how he handles Manziel and say, do I want to work with this guy again the next time he gets a head coaching job?
Yeah. I mean, and this is where the organizational politics come in, right? It's just the guys, the people who drafted Manziel probably want to see him play because their jobs are on the line about whether Johnny Manziel pans out. Mike Pettine's trying to scrape together 7 or 8 wins to make sure he keeps his job. And like you said, the jobs of those people he spent the most time with. There are often competing ideologies when you have a team that is experiencing so much dysfunction. And I don't know if there's any team in the league that's experienced as much dysfunction over the past decade as this one.
No, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed. Maybe a few years ago I would have said the Jaguars, but still, man, the Browns. Did you see the reaction videos to their the field goal return loss to the Ravens, some of the Browns fans in the stands?
It's a harsh life, man. It is. I can't even imagine. And I joke about just the fact that my team hasn't won a Super Bowl in my lifetime. It's been 30 years. And you go through games like last Sunday and watching Blaine Gabbert scamper for, you know, game-winning plays. But just having a team where there isn't even some semblance of hope. There isn't even a core of players where you say we're moving almost in the right direction. They've missed on so many picks. They've missed on so many hires. They've lost out on so many maybe talented coaches because it just is not a tenable situation there. It's really impossible to imagine having it gone any worse. I'd be really hard pressed.
Well, let's move on to another sad story. Frank Cignetti, the offensive coordinator in St. Louis, gets fired. Assistant head coach for the offense, Rob Boris, takes over as his coordinator. In Jeff Fisher's memory, this is the first time he can remember firing an assistant coach mid-season. Before the show, you and I were kind of brainstorming coaches who have had the kind of longevity that Fisher now has in St. Louis without a modicum of success. And you make a great point here based on an earlier part of Jeff Fisher's career.
Jeff Fisher in Tennessee for a good stretch was the same Jeff Fisher we see now. I mean, when he originally got the job, when the season he actually took over, he took over on an interim basis halfway through the year, which is crazy. That was in 1994, by the way. Man, that is
a long time ago.
That's nuts. So, and then his first four seasons as a full time head coach, 7-9, 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. I mean, yeesh. I mean, that's who he is. Obviously, they had a really nice stretch, but for long periods of Jeff Fisher's career, that's exactly who he's been as a head coach. Just a guy who can scrape together 500 seasons with decent rosters. And so here's the argument if you're St. Louis, right? So his first four seasons in St. Louis, almost mirror image of that. 7-8-1, 7-9, 6-10. So you'd like to get a little closer to 8-8. They're 4-8 right now. They probably aren't going to get there again. But if you're St. Louis, you're sitting there thinking, well, after those first 4 years of mediocre 500 football in Tennessee, they go 13-3 in 1999 and losing the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Rams are very far from that step, and I don't think Jeff Fisher at this moment in time is getting them much closer to it.
Well, here's the thing. He makes that turnaround with the Titans / Oilers, but the most important thing he did was draft a quarterback in Steve McNair. And Steve McNair struggled for a short period of time. He was a backup for a little bit there. I believe he was a rookie in Fisher's first season. So it took a while to develop that guy. I don't think that rookie, that young quarterback, is on the roster right now. So you're talking about waiting 3 or 4 more years to develop that guy once you finally draft him.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Foles has been about as bad as any quarterback in the league this year that I've watched. It's been absolutely brutal. And if Case Keenum was healthy, Nick Foles wouldn't even be playing. So they've been searching for answers. They've been searching for answers for a long time. And the lack of a passing game and the lack of weapons on the outside has just – Todd Gurley is doing nothing right now. I mean, at a certain point, you can't have a sustainable running game when you have no downfield threats, no air threats whatsoever. So that was always going to kind of probably come back to earth as soon as teams got some tape and understood how they were manufacturing space for him. The defense has been good. I mean, very good, but not quite to the level that you would have hoped. Robert Quinn has been healthy for a lot of the year. He's been in and out. Long's missed some time. Aaron Donald has been an absolute monster. I mean, one of the best players in football. But when you don't have all four pieces of that pass rush clicking at the same time, it's not going to be able to be the absolute just driving force wrecking ball crew that we might have envisioned before the season started. So if they're...
And the thing is...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, and the thing is, no matter how good a defense is, you can't leave them on the field all game. I mean, if the strength of your team is the defensive line... And they're pinning their ears back. Well, I guess they're not even able to pin their ears back because the other team is up. The other team is running the ball. Those guys are going to get worn down. And I think Michael Brockers, William Hayes, Robert Quinn, Nick Fairley, they're all having good seasons. And Aaron Donald is one of the best players in the NFL. But if you leave any defense on the field, I don't care if they're the 2013 Seahawks. If they're on the field every four plays, you know, you're running four or five play drives on offense, they're going to get scored on.
I still don't think the personnel in the Philadelphia defense is that bad. I really don't. I think that if they had a little bit more time to actually get some breath, they might be a little better. It's really hard to be a sustainable great defense when your offense is so bad. And I mean, when I saw the, back to my personal examples, when the Bears were playing Arizona earlier this year, I think the Bears defense has been fine for stretches. But when Jimmy Clausen was in there getting 6 yards of possession, you're going to fall apart against a really good team. And I mean, the Rams, I think they put up a decent fight against Arizona last week. Arizona has one of the three or four best offenses in football. But eventually, the levees are going to break. You're just not going to be able to sustain game-long runs at stopping a really great offense when you're on the field the whole time.
I actually talked to Jimmy yesterday.
Yeah? How was that?
It was good. You know, have you ever met him?
I have never met him, no.
He was okay. You know, I'm working on this story where I'm talking to everybody who's ever been named number one in the Rivals 100 list for high school.
Interesting.
And what impact it had on their lives. And, you know, I asked him if it gave him a little bit of perhaps overconfidence. You know, you don't want to anger a guy, but you want to get to the meat of it. And if you remember Jimmy Clausen's recruitment, he showed up to his press conference with the three high school championship rings, and he was, like, showing them off for the camera. He showed up in the Hummer.
He went to Oaks Christian, didn't he?
Yeah, he went to Oaks Christian. Yeah. And he said, yeah, you know, I was 17 and everybody was calling me the best quarterback to ever play high school football. I was a little bit overconfident.
Who's the best player in the NFL right now that was named that?
Adrian Peterson.
That sounds right. There are some dudes who just, you know what? They got it. We knew early. Yeah, that I remember. I mean, just watching that Army All-American Bowl when he was in it. It's just like, oh, my God, what is this?
Yeah. Well, there's a good number of pretty decent players who came out of that, but there's a large number of bad players who were number one. I mean, just looking at the list right now, Derek Williams, Jimmy, Terrell Pryor, Bryce Brown just got cut in Seattle.
Bryce Brown's a really amazing one.
Yeah. Ronald Powell, who's the defensive end, he's on the Bucks IR right now. So there's way more misses than hits, but it's high school. You know, they're all 17. A lot changes.
Clowney was number one, wasn't he?
Clowney was a number one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I used to be very familiar with that list. Not much anymore. I don't watch a ton of college football, to be totally honest with you, which is really, it leaves me out of the conversation at this time of year. Where, I mean, everyone's like, I'm sitting there, I'm watching Iowa Michigan State last weekend. And first of all, what a miserable football game. I can't imagine people spend 4 hours every Saturday doing that. But somebody's asking me, what do you think? Who's going to win? And I was like, I have no idea. I don't watch either of these two teams. I'm watching Connor Cook and just being not very impressed at all.
Yeah. If Andy was on the podcast today, he would go off for the next 15 minutes about how he will only watch the NFL and he will only watch the NBA and he'll only watch pro sports because he doesn't like watching that lower level of competition. He wants to watch the best level of competition.
I can understand that. I also appreciate it for what it is. I enjoy college football. Just with this year especially, it was one of those things where I finally settled into the fact that if I watch football all day on Saturday and I watch football all day on Sunday, that's what I do all weekend. And that's not really what I want to do. I kind of want to do some other stuff. I have friends, as hard as that is to believe.
Well, also, our jobs are the NFL. I mean, it's nice to kind of not watch football for the day right before you're watching football all day.
Exactly. And I watch so much of the NBA. That being said, I mean, the Heisman race is coming. Do you have somebody that is a favorite of yours?
Well, you know, I watch a little bit of college football. I watch the big games, and then, like, after the season, I'll watch the cut-ups.
Sure.
You know, they'll cut up, like, an entire game of a cornerback. every play he was targeted or whatever.
That's when I come around on it too.
Yeah. So I have an idea of the three finalists. You got Derrick Henry, the Alabama running back, Christian McCaffrey, the Stanford running back, and Deshaun Watson, the Clemson quarterback. I think everybody pretty much assumes it's either Henry's or McCaffrey's award. Yeah, I was having a conversation with a scout that I know earlier today, because we do this this show on 120 Sports in Chicago. We do this like morning football show, and we were talking about the Heisman finalists, and he was kind of making comparisons between NFL players and some of these guys, and he called Derrick Henry, you know, like a smaller Brandon Jacobs, and he kind of compared Christian McCaffrey to Reggie Bush, but like a poor man's Reggie Bush, a little bit smaller, not as strong coming into the NFL. I mean, odds are these guys aren't going to do much. I mean, I know we've had a run of Heisman winners who have had success recently, but if you look at the top three Heisman vote getters in the past like decade, it's not a great list.
Yeah, there are a lot of guys who are just solid college players and not much else. I mean, recently it's been good just with that Mariota and Winston playing as well as they are right now. And then Cam Newton, obviously, I mean, the guy who is a Heisman winner that's an MVP candidate. But outside of that, you know, you get your Bradfords, which I think we can close the book on that now. Your Tebows, your Troy Smiths, Leinart, Jason White. Carson Palmer's having a pretty decent year. But, I mean, it's just the fact that Carson Palmer is the only guy from that early 2000s, late 90s that's even an NFL player at a high level is kind of crazy.
Yeah. I was cycling through the last few years. I'd have to say the worst year for NFL prospects on the Heisman list was 08. It was Sam Bradford comes in at number one, Colt McCoy number two, Tim Tebow number three. Brutal.
I really like that year in college football, though. That 08, I mean, Sam Bradford, what did he throw, like 55 touchdowns that year? I mean, it was insane. That Oklahoma offense was absurd. That team, just in general. I mean, you have him, DeMarco Murray, Jermaine Gresham was on that team, Ryan Broyles, and I think Kenny Stills was probably a freshman on that team. And then they had Gerald McCoy. I mean, it was an absurd collection of talent.
I kind of thought that Oklahoma would be one of these dynasties, like an Alabama-type team going forward off of that. But they kind of took a step back after Bradford.
I mean, it's not the same in college as it is in the NFL with not having a quarterback, but it certainly helps to have one. And they really haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, until this year, which is named Baker Mayfield. I mean that guy's playing pretty well. But outside of that, I mean, there's no Oklahoma quarterbacks that have been viable NFL prospects.
Right. Let's jump into some of these game previews. We like to do five every week. But first, got to tell the listeners about FanDuel. The NFL is reaching its crescendo, which means that season-long fantasy football is coming to an end. In the old days, everybody but the top few players in your league had long since dropped out. Now on FanDuel, you can play fantasy sports all year long. Here's a great offer for our listeners. When you use the code THEMMQB at FanDuel.com, you can enter a no-risk tournament. That's any tournament offered on FanDuel at up to $10. If you win, you keep the money. If you lose, FanDuel will refund your account, guaranteed. They're just giving away money, Robert.
That's how it works.
FanDuel is the best place to play one-week fantasy football. Building a team is easy and fun. Just pick your players and stay under the salary cap. Entry fees start at $1, so there's a league for everyone. They also offer NBA and NHL, so you can play fantasy sports for real cash any night of the week. Think you know fantasy football? Come and prove it over at FanDuel.com. Over 2 million players have already won money. Now it's your turn. To get started, go to FanDuel and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use the code THEMMQB and sign up now. All right.
Here's one of the pitfalls of yearly fantasy football is that I'm sitting here about to start the playoffs, and I have to stare at whether I started Buck Allen against the Seahawks or Jarvis Landry against the Giants, and I have absolutely no idea. The Giants have been garbage against slot receivers. They've allowed more receptions to slot receivers than any team in the league. They're 30th in passer rating to slot receivers. It makes sense to play Jarvis Landry, but Buck Allen caught like 17 passes last week, and he's the only viable offensive player on that team, but he's going against Seattle. This is why fantasy football is dumb. I will pick the wrong one. I will lose, and my friends will make fun of me, and none of it is worth it.
You know, it's it's impossible to predict, because who knows what the Seattle defense is going to look like with Deshaun Shedd starting at corner. I mean, like, we have no sample size to judge that on. I don't know, man. Like, I wish there was just you know how when you go into Madden, you go into your depth chart and you hit Y and it just auto reorders it. I wish I could just auto reorder my lineup, have ESPN tell me what to do, and just walk away. I don't want to make these decisions.
Just have a randomizer.
Exactly.
My biggest issue right now is that my team was partially constructed around Rob Gronkowski, and the way that it looks right now with these 10-2 Patriots is that he will not be playing this week against the Texans. We have seen through 1 week that is a concern.
Yeah, it's a big deal, and I think it's just as big of a deal as losing Julian Edelman to injury. We hail Tom Brady as this guy who was able to make these quick decisions, find open receivers immediately. His release time is always at the top of the NFL. I mean, no matter the year, for the last 6, 7, 8 years, he gets the ball out of his hands quicker than anybody else. But it's dropped, you know, dramatically in the last few weeks. I think PFF has him as the 8th slowest release time over the past few weeks since Edelman went out. He's completed fewer than 60% of his passes in back-to-back weeks. You go back and look at some of Edelman's best games this season with Gronkowski, and you can understand why they're such a great option and such a great combo together. I mean, typically they'll have them on the same side of the formation. You've got Gronkowski running a flag or a post or a seam, and then you've got Edelman in the slot just scooting right up under him, right across the middle. And so you've got somebody to beat a man coverage. You've got somebody to beat zone coverage. It's nearly impossible to kind of wrap your defense around. I mean, it's impossible to game plan for. And without one piece or without both of those pieces, you have Tom Brady trying to create where nothing's there.
And then you start to see how it all snowballs. The two games before this Eagles game, he'd gotten hit a combined 23 times against Buffalo and Denver. He got hit 12 more times against the Eagles. I mean, Fletcher Cox and Vinnie Curry and Connor Barwin, those guys were just chewing up that Patriots offensive line. And when he can't get the ball out quickly and he has to rely on that line to hold up, they can't do that. It's a banged-up group. It's not the guys they want playing in those spots. It all starts to crumble. I mean, the pieces just start falling away one by one, and that this team turns into a mortal one offensively. And that's no fault of Tom Brady's. The fact that he could sustain with this offensive line for as long as he did is impressive. But when you're not fully in the rhythm of who you want to be, when you can't, it's almost like with Gronk gone, he's missing a limb and it's still tingling. You know, it's a part of you, and it's a part of exactly who you want to be as an offense. And they're not there right now. They're out of step, and you see it. You see the cracks starting to show in their personnel.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about their opponent, the Texans, still in contention at 6-6. And you mentioned Brandon Graham and Connor Barwin and some of the success the Eagles had against their offensive line. You've got J.J. Watt coming to town. J.J. coming off this Bills game where, for the first time since 2011, he doesn't have a sack or a hit on the quarterback. I mean, you got to give a little bit of credit to Richie Incognito and Cordy Glenn. But the Patriots don't, as you mentioned, have the kind of personnel to deal with a J.J. Watt right now.
And I think the Bills were going to do everything in their power to not let J.J. Watt do what he did to them last year. That's the game against Buffalo last season in Houston, I think, is the best football game I've ever seen anyone play. He had nine hits. He had that pick six that won them the game. He somehow didn't get a sack, which seems impossible, but he was just an absolute monster, and I think they were willing to do anything they could to prevent that from happening again. So you saw their backup tight ends played a combined 29 snaps. You know, the Matthew Mulligan of the world, which it's funny that their blocking tight end is Matthew Mulligan. He is the blocking tight end. Like, if I had to picture one, that's who it is. So I think you may see that from New England. I mean, you may see more two tight end sets where they keep somebody in to chip and they really focus a significant amount of their effort on slowing him down. Because if he's out there against, you know, whoever who's playing right tackle for the Patriots right now, I believe it's not Cameron Fleming. It's Marcus Cannon. I mean, if he's playing against Marcus Cannon one-on-one, that's a long day for Marcus Cannon. It's not going to go so well.
Wouldn't it be nice to have Aaron Hernandez on the roster right now?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people. Pretty much anybody that could play football and catch one. That's really what they're looking for. It's not a high bar.
Let's move on to Steelers-Bengals. I love this rivalry. I've attended a couple of these games in the past couple years, and just the atmosphere, it's like playoff football. It could be September, the beginning of September, and it's a playoff game when it's the Steelers and the Bengals. The Steelers come in 7-5. They visit Cincinnati, who is 10-2. The Bengals are currently the number one seed in the AFC. I could see this being a swing game in that division where if the Steelers are able to kind of derail them here and win out, they could potentially win the division.
Oh wow!
Just the way Roethlisberger is playing, you couldn't see it happening.
Winning the division would be tough. I feel like the way the Roethlisberger is playing, they're clearly the most dangerous team on the bottom end of the playoffs. If you played a tournament right now with every team in the AFC, all 16 are in. If you had to bet your life on a winner, who would it be at this very moment?
Arizona.
No, it's just the AFC.
Oh, just the AFC? And New England is still all injured?
Yeah, I mean, just the teams as they are currently constructed.
I think it would come down to Broncos versus Steelers.
I would probably pick Pittsburgh. I mean, that dude is just throwing smoke right now. It is unbelievable. Watching them just pick apart the Colts was insane. And he was ridiculous last year. They had the second best offense in the league by DVOA after Green Bay. It was the best season of his career, probably. He's just as good right now, and he's doing it with less help. Because last year, their offensive line was intact almost the entire season. Now they're playing with Villanueva at left tackle. They're playing with Cody Wallace at center instead of Kelvin Beachum and Marquise Pouncey. He's without Le'Veon Bell, which affects you in two ways. One, your running game isn't as good because Le'Veon Bell's a beast. Two, he's maybe the best pass-catching running back in football. So he's doing it with less weapons, a worse offensive line, and nothing has changed. The one thing that's different, it's really interesting, is his numbers are very similar in the sense of, you know, his QBR, yards per attempt, everything else. But he's throwing it in a different way. Last year, his air yards per attempt was 8.48, which was 11th in the league. It was just over league average, which is 8.12. This year, he's first with 10.74. The results, as it come down to in the aggregate, yards, everything else, look similar. But the way they're getting him is this dude is just chucking it down the field. It's incredible to watch. I mean, outside of Arizona, there really isn't anybody else that does this at this level.
I think the one thing that is different in a positive sense is that Antonio Brown is probably at the peak of his powers as an NFL player.
He's unbelievable. I mean, he's just unbelievable. And the fact that Martavis Bryant is just chilling on the other side, being like, yeah, just chuck it to me. We're cool. I mean, what are you going to do? I really don't know. And he just puts it wherever he wants right now. I'm just thinking about the line from Wedding Crashers, where it's, you can throw an interception on this play. I was first team All-State. I can make it rain out here.
I will make it rain out here.
That is where Ben Roethlisberger is sitting right now. It's kind of absurd. And I just spent 5 minutes gushing about the Steelers. The Bengals are beating people up. This is a really good team.
You know, I was thinking about this watching the Steelers game this past weekend. You know, I don't notice Heath Miller out there anymore like I did earlier in his career.
Well, and he was hurt last week.
What has been their history of drafting tight ends? Have they picked anybody recently with a higher pick to try to replace him?
They picked Jesse James this year. I believe they kind of wanted Max Williams, and the Ravens jumped them to pick Max Williams. I assume the Ravens thought that the Steelers were going to snag him.
Yeah. Jesse James, one of those guys that comes out with that dubious character issues tag that nobody really can define.
Yeah, and then didn't Max Williams just get suspended?
No, that was the other guy, Nick Boyle.
No, never mind. I'm wrong about that. By the way, the fact that the Ravens and the Steelers in the same draft picked tight ends named Jesse James and Max Williams is insane. Max with two S's, or two X's, which is very important. That really makes it, the fact that there are two X's.
let's talk a little bit about your first big story for the MMQB.
Oh, okay.
Because do you mind?
No, not at all.
Well, if the listeners haven't read it yet, it's about the new Andy Dalton. And you lead with this sporting goods store that has little to nothing to do with Andy Dalton and the Cincinnati Bengals, but it kind of tells you a little bit about the city's perception of him. I always am a little bit scared to lead big, long stories with kind of abstract anecdotes that are kind of tangential to the actual story, but you do an awesome job here in bringing people in. How did you find that place?
I always walk around. I mean, that's just kind of the thing. When I get to a city, I try to walk as much as I can. And I really, with Cincinnati especially, I went out pretty much every night, just kind of eating dinner out at bars, trying to talk to everybody. So I'm very mobile when I go places. And I was just walking down the street and looking for coffee the first day before I went to the stadium, and just looked inside the door really quick, and it was just sitting right there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a nice bit of luck. That's really all it was.
The one thing that I thought reading that story, I mean, I thought a bunch of things, but the one thing that jumped out to me was the relationship between Dalton and Hugh Jackson and how they've kind of coalesced, and how Jackson has seemed to have ceded some of his authority to Andy Dalton. To me, Hugh Jackson is in the top three or four of my list for prospective head coaching candidates. I mean, I know he ruffled some feathers and turned a lot of people off with some of his behavior the last time he had the job. But I think his relationship with Andy Dalton kind of vaults him into that Adam Gase, Josh McDaniels sphere.
I love their offense. To me, they're one of the more fun groups of players to watch. Just all the different things they do. You're watching the other day, and you know they're motioning Whitworth and Eric, what's the kid's from Oregon's name? The tackle they picked in the first round.
I'm blanking on his name.
It's not super important. Number 74. And they're motioning those guys out, so they have three linemen. There are only three guys on the interior. There's the center and the two guards, and then Dalton. And
oh, you're talking Jake Fisher.
Jake Fisher, yes. That's who it is. So, mm-hmm. And the first play, they threw a simple screen to the outside to Marvin Jones. So he had two linemen in front of him. It was a screen, but they were already outside. So it was kind of crazy. And then the next time they did it was down near the goal line, and he went the other way with it. They do tons of cool stuff like that. And I think that their offense is good enough to be dominant within the normal constraints of an NFL offense. They can just line up and play straight and beat you up. But they also do a bunch of cool stuff that puts them in advantageous situations. I mean, I remember when they played, I think it was Baltimore, and they're putting quads to one side and it was Seattle. They put quads to one side. They put AJ Green alone on the other side, and they just run a simple slant back to him. You're not stopping that. There's nobody on that side of the field. He's just going to eat that all day. And I just think that they're having it's an offense that looks like it's having fun. There have been – when you see this, you see when teams are healthy all season, like the Green Bay was last year, like Pittsburgh was last year. When you have the same personnel for an entire year, it allows you to evolve as an offense and take chances and take further steps, because you don't have to be starting from square one every single day. That's what the Patriots are having to do now. That's what Green Bay is having to do in a lot of ways. The Bengals are one of the healthiest teams in the league, and you're seeing the results of what that actually means. Dalton's playing the best football of his career, and I feel like that ownership and that evolution is a big part of that. And you could say the same for Cam Newton. I mean, it's harder to be a more impactful quarterback than he was in the Superdome on Sunday. When you're going through a season like the Panthers are going through, and you have a chance to do something very special, Sunday is those are the type of games you need. You need to win those type of games where you're putting the ball on the turf, you're throwing it to the other team, everything is going wrong, and you should lose, and you don't. We've reached that point with this team, and that is a dangerous level for anyone to be at.
And we're going to move into the Falcons-Panthers game this weekend, because it's huge for the Falcons' chances here in that division. But my big fear with Cam Newton, did you recall the play this weekend where he's sprinting towards the right pylon, and he sort of halfway dives in, and he gets popped right in the side of the head by a defensive back?
Yeah, that's always going to be a risk he runs, just the way he plays. And when he's so important to that team, it's hard not to hold your breath when you watch plays like that.
I mean, especially if you've got a vested interest. I mean, if you're Dave Gettleman or Ron Rivera, you've got an undefeated team, a defense playing unbelievably. But I don't think anybody has any fantasies about Derek Anderson leading this team in the playoffs. No. When Cam Newton is hurt. I mean, it's not going to happen.
You saw what Cam Newton's dealing with. I mean, he's playing Russian roulette with Ted Ginn. I mean, he hits him in the hands, and sometimes he's going to catch it, and it's going to be a touchdown. And sometimes it's going to be a brutal drop that makes everyone in the entire stadium sigh. It's a weird, frustrating life. And there are a few quarterbacks in the league that could be making it work the way that he is right now. Do you think defensively last week, are you concerned about what New Orleans managed, or do you think this is kind of a blip for Carolina?
Well, I think that they're bound to lose a game late here to sort of challenge that will sort of challenge them to kind of reinvent themselves on defense. So I wasn't surprised, and I won't be surprised to see them lose one here late to a team that they should beat. And I think it's something that'll make them better. I think that, while I talked to Roman Harper about this. And he said when he was 13-0 on the Saints and they lost on Thursday night, that first game that they lost to the Cowboys, it challenged them to reassess some of the things that they were having success with and that, that had caused them to rest on their laurels. So I think that was a case of them resting on their laurels a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to be on point every single week in the NFL. I mean, just there's so many – because the games are so dependent on turnovers and because of the way the ball is going to bounce. I mean, that Jonathan Stewart fumble, he's half an inch away from being down. Yeah, I mean, those plays are just going to happen. But the fact that they could overcome them is really terrifying. I mean, that's a mark of a really, really dangerous team. Yeah. What do we think is wrong with Atlanta?
I have no idea. I mean, they don't have a rushing touchdown since October 15th, and it doesn't get any easier from them from here. They've still got... they still have the Panthers twice in the last four games. How ridiculous is that?
I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think that right now, I feel like if we did that same tournament in the NFC that we just did in the AFC, I'm probably picking Seattle. I mean, they look really scary right now. I still love Carolina and Arizona, but it looks to me like you can just pencil Seattle in for that sixth spot. And that's taking into account Minnesota just not taking a total nosedive.
I got to see the Seahawks up against a great quarterback and a couple great wide receivers who can spread the field. I mean, they play Arizona the last week of the season, but that might be a scenario where one team or the other is resting people. But you're still going into the playoffs with a group of defensive backs that don't have a lot of time together. And Jeremy Lane coming off an injury. I don't know that I would pick Seattle if the tournament started today in the NFC. I think I would probably go with Arizona.
I love Arizona. I mean, I've been a fan of that team for years. I feel like I'm kind of like a Cardinals hipster in a weird way. But the thing that is frightening to me about Seattle right now is not the defense. Russell Wilson is really, really hot. He's playing fantastic right now. I mean, you just watch what he did to that Minnesota defense, which is a good defense, on Sunday. He lit them on fire. And to do that to Pittsburgh is one thing, but to do it to a defense that's been top half of the league most of the season in terms of advanced metrics, one of the best scoring defenses in the league, he just stomped all over them. And it could have been worse if that touchdown run hadn't gotten called back.
But they're also without Harrison Smith for that game, and I think
he's a good player.
They're one of these teams that is not going to thrive if you take away one or two of their best players, whereas Seattle is a team that can survive in that scenario.
Sure. And Barr gets gimpy, and he's been so important for them. That's fair. For me, looking at this game, I think that Atlanta's going to have such a hard time with Carolina, and I think Carolina's 13-0, and we'll see what happens after that. It's when you look at teams at this time in the year, it's really not super confusing why teams are successful and why they're not. Carolina, all five of their offensive linemen are back. They had missed a couple games. Norwell did. Cleo missed a couple. Now their starting five is back. Cincinnati, playing with their starting five. the guys that are healthy at the end of the season are probably going to have the best shot. It sucks that that's how it is, and that it sometimes is that simple, but sometimes it is that simple.
Yeah. The thing that scares me about Carolina and the reason I don't think they're going to go undefeated is just because of how one-dimensional they are on offense. I mean, they're the only team with more rushing attempts than passing attempts, 413 rushing attempts to 372 passing attempts. 108 of those rushing attempts are Cam Newton's. And then if you look at the targets, I mean, Greg Olsen, tight end, is getting 104 targets in that offense, while Ted Ginn has 77, Devin Funchess has 42. I mean, they're almost they're probably more one-dimensional than you could say the Patriots are with just Gronkowski out there.
They are, but I think it's a formula that works for them. I mean, they're a very good running team. It's hard to be as successful on an efficiency basis running the ball as they are when you do it so much. And they are. I mean, they still are one of the top three or four running teams in the league by offensive DVOA. I haven't checked the new metrics today. They just came out. I knew that I believe Kansas City was there last week. So this is great radio. Carolina is sixth. So they've taken a little bit of a fall, but still one of the most efficient running teams in the league. And when you're the most run-heavy team in the league, that's not always easy to do. All right, let's move on. Let's get to another game with very important wild card implications. The Buffalo Bills with a huge win on Sunday in a game that where the last 60 seconds took about 40 minutes. It was like an NBA game. None of it made sense. I was just yelling at the TV for it to end. And then Philadelphia, improbably, for no reason at all, is still very much alive in the NFC playoffs. Football is really stupid.
I tell you who I love on Philadelphia, and I think he's one of these unsung heroes who, you know, should be considered a star by the end of the season, but probably won't. When I think of these guys, I'm thinking of guys like Mike Neal in Green Bay, Kawan Short in Carolina. I think on that level is Brandon Graham, the outside linebacker in Philadelphia. I mean, he has a tremendous game here against Tom Brady, and he's been doing it all season.
Long time Grantland NFL podcast favorite, Brandon Graham. As he was,
oh, really?
As he was wasting away in Philadelphia in the 3-4 and not playing, Barnwell and I every year would just be like, some 4-3 team, just call them. Just call and throw a third-round pick at them. This dude is a monster. If you're Tampa Bay, how does this not make sense? Just go get him and figure it out later. He's a really good player, and for me, the star in that front on that front four, Fletcher Cox is a beast. Yeah. That dude is a serious problem. And if I'm sitting there thinking, what is the most miserable 3 hours I can possibly imagine, having to block Fletcher Cox for 60 plays is definitely in the conversation.
I can think of some worse scenarios. How about having to cover Dez Bryant and listen to his mouth?
Yeah, that's a fair one. Yeah, I think one of those dudes, and Dez Bryant will beat the crap out of you. That's the other part of that. I mean,
the other thing. Yeah,
Antonio Brown will snap your shins, but the fact that Dez will be hitting you in the face the entire game—that's what makes that just not very fun at all. Who do you like here? I don't really know how to place this game. I still have no idea how good the Eagles are at football, so that makes it a little difficult.
Yeah. Well, I think the Bills are going to block this thing a little bit better than the Patriots did. I think a lot of it depends on Sammy Watkins. I mean, he's shown himself to be a big play guy, but not super consistent in that offense. Last four games, I mean, he's averaging 134 yards receiving. So he's turned it on. I mean, that's with Tyrod Taylor under center. It's a big game for both teams because, you know, the Eagles would like to keep pace in the NFC East here. They're 5-7. What are they? They're tied. They're in first place at the moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're very much in the hunt for this thing. And when you watch them the last 2 weeks, that just doesn't even seem possible. It looked like they were just ready to roll over against Tampa Bay and against the Lions on Thanksgiving. I mean, I don't think anyone came away from that Thanksgiving game and was thinking, yeah, this team definitely has a chance down the stretch. I thought that it was over, and apparently it's not. I don't know anything about anything.
If you asked me to pick this game, I'll take the Bills.
I'm probably taking the Bills too. I feel like right now the Bills' offense is better than anything the Eagles are doing. And if you had told me coming into the season that the Bills would be sustaining their playoff run or their run at the playoffs with good offensive football rather than good defensive football, I don't know what I would have said to you. But right now, their offense is better than their defense. And it's because the guys playing better than I thought they were going to be. Their line is surprisingly solid. You know, Incognito's having a bounce back year. Tyrod Taylor has been the type of quarterback they needed. And now Sammy Watkins emerging. It's the kind of group they probably envisioned before the season started. And if you only you could say that about their defense, they'd be a surefire playoff team.
I mean, you look at the comparison between the two running backs. The Eagles jettison LeSean McCoy and bring in DeMarco Murray. Murray's averaging 3.5 yards per carry. I think he had 24 yards against the Pats. LeSean McCoy, when he's healthy, super effective, 4.6 yards per carry. A lot of that has to do with the D-line, but I think it's just a better system fit for LeSean in Buffalo than it is for DeMarco in Philadelphia.
I've really liked what he's looked like running the ball. It's been very fun. That's just not the type of... He has had stretches where he hasn't looked explosive. He's been dinged up. But he's been fun again this year. And football is just better when LeSean McCoy is playing well.
Yeah. Let's move on to our last game, and then we're going to get into recommended reading. We like to do a segment called non-football recommended reading, so I hope you read something non-football this week.
I've been reading. I do like the reading. I learned how to read from last week to this week, so it's been a big one for me.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So we've got Washington at the Bears. You're new to the podcast. You're new to the MMQB. So before we talk about the football aspect of it, and I know you have a lot to say about the Bears, I wanted to ask you about our policy at the MMQB and what you thought about it. A few years ago, we kind of decided that we weren't going to say Washington's team name. And for the purposes of this, I think we can say Redskins. What has been your feeling on the word Redskins?
I don't use it. I mean, I just think that we also made a similar kind of policy change at Grantland. It wasn't something we did as a conscious choice. I think that everyone chose it on their own, but we all landed there. It's not necessary to me. I think that I can communicate what I'm thinking and communicate talking about them without saying it. I think from now on, I'm going to go with the solution from the Aziz Ansari show, which is calling them the Washington Breadsticks. I think that's way better. I mean, it makes total sense. It sounds very similar. Everyone knows what you're saying. I think that's what I'm going to do from now on. It's just going to be Washington Breadsticks.
Yeah. This actually, I wrote a story on Kirk Cousins last week, and this was the first thing that I've written about Washington and didn't have one single commenter on Twitter or that I noticed underneath the story. You know, I'll scan that, but I don't look at all of them. Didn't have a single person say, oh, here comes the MMQB, you know, left-wing pinko commies not saying Redskins. Nobody seemed to notice this time, which was encouraging.
I think we're trending in the right direction with that. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the football. Washington's 0-5 on the road this season. That's an often cited statistic, but they've played some tough teams on the road. I don't necessarily buy that they're playing worse football when they're not in Landover.
Yeah, I mean it's the way the schedule breaks, that has very little to do with how good you are on the road, versus how good you are at home. I mean, I think that some teams do have an advantage at home just because of audibling and getting into the right play. But watching them, I haven't thought, man, this is just a different offense when they're playing at home versus when they play on the road.
The Bears defense forced the 49ers to 7 3-and-outs before allowing the two plays that ultimately lost them the game.
Tell me about
Blaine
it.
The Blaine Gabbert blazing 44-yard run, and then the Torrey Smith 71-yard catch. How does that feel?
I was just kind of sitting in disbelief. I mean, I was watching with my mother, and I think that she just saw the pain and despair in my face. And it hurts so bad because I covered Blaine Gabbert in my first year doing this as a job when I was at Mizzou. And
Really?
I was a big supporter, and there are long-running jokes about my Blaine Gabbert fandom and just how I thought he was going to be pretty good in the NFL. And I feel like I am finally vindicated. This is a bounce back campaign for Blaine, and I cannot wait until he ends up on some contender. They talk themselves into being like, you know what? This is it. We're gonna give Blaine the reins, and then it just all comes crashing down. So I tweeted on Sunday. It was a complicated emotional experience for me, but this Bears season, in so many ways, I've been playing with house money emotionally. This team was supposed to be a train wreck, and they haven't been. They've been a reasonable NFL team. And I know Cutler, I mean, he throws that just miserable pick six on Sunday. You just can't have that. Has definitely taken a step back in his last few games. But if you look at what Jay Cutler is working with on that offense, it's nightmarish. Their offensive line is full of guys who weren't supposed to be playing. You know, Jonas Cross, who's playing center, he wasn't supposed to start. Charles Leno Jr. is playing left tackle. He's not supposed to play. Patrick Omame has been on like 17 teams. And Kyle Long still isn't a right tackle. You could tell me anything you want. He was an all-world guard. This is a mistake, the fact that he has to do this. And then you look at his receiving core. If it's not one guy, it's the other. 2 weeks ago, Jeffrey and Forte started their first game together all year. And then as soon as those two guys get back, Marcus Wilson and Martellus Bennett are out. And Bennett's out for the season. I mean, he's throwing the ball to Josh Bellamy. And it's not going to go well. I mean, he's running for his life. He doesn't have any receivers. I feel like if you take into consideration everything that's gone wrong for this team, it has been a pretty encouraging season overall for the direction that they're headed.
And you know, I wasn't even that impressed with Martellus's play before he was injured.
I would be surprised if he were back.
Now, let me ask you this. Another guy who's been a big name for them, Matt Forte, he's sort of being phased out in a small way by Jeremy Langford. Do you think that Forte is back?
It's hard to say. I think that right now they're going in. They have about $92.5 million tied up on their cap next year. Cap is expected to rise to about $150. That's a decent amount of cap room. And they lose some of the bigger contracts that were on their books. You know, there's no more Jared Allen dead money. I'm looking at this Pernell McPhee deal. God, that was a good contract. He has $2 million in dead money left on his deal after this season. Not like they're going to cut him because he's stolen my heart and I love him. But God, that's a good contract. So, I mean, if they cut Martellus Bennett, that's another $5.2 million. I wouldn't be surprised based on kind of the rumblings that are coming out of there if he weren't back. So you do that, you're looking at $55 million in room. If you can get Matt Forte back on a reasonable deal, I would do that. He's a very good player, and I think that not necessarily handing Jeremy Langford the reins when there's no reason to, if you can do it for a shrewd fiscal choice, I would do it. But we know it only takes one team. It only takes Dallas offering him $7 million a year to play running back, and then you're out of the running. It's over.
There's a MMQB story to be done on Pernell McPhee and Muck City, USA. Pahokee, Florida. There's something like 20 guys in the NFL who grew up in Pahokee, and nobody really knows about it, but it's this god-awful outpost in Florida where these incredible athletes come from.
I loved him in Baltimore, and part of me, when I was writing about before he was even a Bear, about where he was going to go, I was hoping that he'd end up on a team where they moved him around a bunch and he got to take advantage of what made him good. And, God, he's been fun to watch this year. I can't say that about many other players in the Bears' defense, even though Eddie Goldman is coming on strong, and he is also vying for my affection. But, God, Pernell McPhee is fun. He has been a very good free agent signing, and you do not see those that often.
You're not a Kyle Fuller fan? He's been great.
Kyle Fuller is okay. He's fine. He's fine. I don't think he's a star by any stretch, but I think that there's a chance that we end up in a place where Eddie Goldman is one, which would be fun.
Well, let's tell the listeners a little bit about another sponsor, SeatGeek. Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers are perfect on the year, and this weekend they shoot for 13-0 at home against the Falcons. You can get your ticket to the Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, and I was just there a couple weeks ago. It's lovely. On the SeatGeek app, they have tons of great deals all over the stadium, and now when you use our code MMQB, you get $20 back on your purchase. Just download the app on your iPhone or Android. It's free and light on your data. Then you search for your event, find the deal for you, enter our code MMQB, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check or refund you on PayPal. So to redeem your promo code and get your $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MMQB in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first purchase. For the NFL, the NBA, the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app, and don't forget to enter our code MMQB.
All right, you want to get into what we've been reading lately? I learned how to read just for this segment, so I'm kind of excited about it.
That's great. All right, so hit me with it.
I actually, the last book I finished, which was about a week ago, I read Pictures at a Revolution by Mark Harris, who was a writer for us at Grantland. He did an incredible job of covering the Oscars, but to say he was just an Oscars writer is really doing Mark a disservice. Few guys, in my opinion, are able to report about the movie industry with in an incisive, informed, just very interesting way. He does an incredible job of doing that and just kind of seeing the ebbs and flows of where it's all headed and just what drives that world right now. And this was his book he wrote back in 2009, and it was about the 1968 Oscars and about the five movies that were nominated for those for the Best Picture, and just how each of them was kind of a touchstone in the history of American cinema in the 20th century. And it's a fascinating book. I mean, he gets all the principal characters that you'd want on the record about it. He's got Dustin Hoffman talking about The Graduate. He has it's all the guys you want. I mean, it's really an incredibly reported book. I love that. And then the one I'm reading right now, I'm reading South of Heaven by Tom French, which I think Tom is a phenomenal newspaper feature writer for a long, long time at the St. Petersburg Times. He is a professor at Indiana University right now. If you're considering going to journalism school, I highly recommend IU if you're not going to Mizzou, because it's a chance to work with Tom. And it's about Florida high school in 1993, and he spends an entire year in a Florida high school just kind of digging into what high school life was like as we approach the turn of the century and how it was different than when he was there. And it's a phenomenally reported book. Again, I mean, the guy does an amazing job. He's an incredible storyteller. You know, he's a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's very talented, so I've been enjoying that one as well. What about you?
It's always amazing to me when journalists, invariably these older white guys, are able to seamlessly embed themselves in places like a high school or, you know, a street corner or a drug corner. Like what comes to mind is David Simon, the creator of The Wire. Sure. And the two books that he wrote, one, he was embedded in the homicide unit, one, he was embedded with dealers on the street. But the way that some awesome writers can just ingratiate themselves into environments is awesome to me.
Tom, and Tom has that, he has this white hair, which also makes him stick out, especially in high school. But even back then, I believe he had it. And what Tom is just really incredible at is just scene and detail. And he really just, there's nothing about a particular image that he's not going to lay out for you. It's all there. It's so easy to find yourself in those places. He really drags you there. And it's a great book. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Well, my recommended non-football reading for the week, and if you're joining us, you know, for the first time, we like to do this at the end of every episode to show that we are actually well-rounded people who discuss things other than football. But it's Stephen E. Ambrose's book, Undaunted Courage. I've just started it. I was in the airport 2 days ago, headed to Minneapolis on Sunday morning to go to that blowout by the Seahawks. And I was rushing and I was just looking at the bookshelf. And I said to this guy, because this older guy standing right next to me looking at the shelf, and I said, hey, that D-Day book is good if you like war books. And he's like, oh, yeah, you should read Undaunted Courage. And it's about the Louisiana Purchase and the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And it's one of those awesome texts that kind of weaves you into the minute details of travel and this adventure that they went on, but also kind of gives you the context and the geopolitical politics of the time. And it doesn't feel like, you know, you're making a clunky transition back and forth. You're kind of seamlessly going in and out of it.
That sounds great. I mean, I've always been amazed by his work and just the breadth of what it's able to be. I mean, there are a few better guys who've written about the history of America in so many different ways as he has. It's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, that's our show for you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for joining the MMQB podcast. I'm Robert Klimko. That's Robert Mays. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.